Welcome to Stu's EV Universe, where you can find anything and everything electric vehicle.
Today on the podcast, we have Russell Bird, MD, family physician at Baptist Health Medical Group, and he's also the chair of the board of directors of Seven County Services, which is a community mental health provider.
Yes, that's it.
Yes, that's it. And a friend of mine, so welcome, Russ.
Yes, thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Nice to see you here.
Fan of the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you.
I mean, look, at Begley Jr., you know, I mean, seen elsewhere,
right.
You know?
That's absolutely. And actually, yeah, that was one of my crowning moments. Yeah, I've been binging, Young Sheldon. So,
oh, was he on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's very cool. But today is special. We've done a lot of podcasts. I think it's like 3 years now, and we haven't talked that much about health and electric vehicles, and that's super, super important. So I was just made aware of a new report that just came out last month, Boosting Health for Children, Benefits of Zero Emission Transportation and Electricity, by the American Lung Association. And it highlights that a widespread transition to zero emission vehicles and electricity would dramatically improve the health of children across the US. The transition would prevent 2.79 million pediatric asthma attacks and millions of other respiratory symptoms and save hundreds of infant lives by 2050. It's pretty ambitious because it's based on projected health impacts if all new passenger vehicles sold are zero emission by 2035 and all new trucks sold are zero emission by 2040. So that is very ambitious, but at least it kind of brings up this point. And this is something that I've been wanting to talk about, and you're right there on the ground. Personally, both my kids have allergies and asthma. And healthcare, you know, the air quality is a big part of all of that. So I'm just really curious about what you see on a day-to-day basis in your practice as far as people coming in that have these kinds of things going on and how cleaner transportation could factor into that.
Right. Well, thank you. First of all, once again, thank you for inviting me here. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the conversation. I'm a family physician. I'm busy. I see many patients a day, and the study, which I did look at, thank you for sending it to me ahead of time, was interesting in that it focused on the pediatric population, but quite frankly, when it comes to the importance of clean air, I have patients of all ages that where clean air is one of their number one priorities. So when you're on the highway, crowded highway,
right,
lots of emissions in that traffic jam, and you see that alert on the overhead, you know, sign that says, you know, ozone action day.
Right.
Okay? That's for real. Okay. I have patients with chronic lung disease, whether it's COPD, interstitial lung disease, or other things, where those days are difficult for them, and they will actually stay inside.
Right.
You know? And they know it. So now the actual study itself, I actually read a reprint a discussion of the study on the internet, on The Hill, which is a political magazine out of Washington where this was posted. So I can't give you a critical analysis of the study itself, but it does certainly equal out with what I see on the ground, as you said, as see on the ground. Now, as a physician, you know, as a physician, physicians look at things differently. Looks at things differently. If there's a problem, we look at things a little more critically. There's no politics. If I have a patient in my exam room, it's, you know, I'm there for them,
right.
Hippocratic oath. And so we can argue what the study says about clean emissions, because while EVs are awesome and I have one, we probably should talk about like my experience too with EVs, which would be fun.
Yes, absolutely.
While I have an EV, it's not a zero emission vehicle. It's
right.
A very efficient vehicle, and I love to drive it, and I'm glad to be doing my part to having a lesser emission future in this country, but it's still, in essence, coal powered.
Right.
You know? Now, that's offset in our house because we have 5 kilowatts of solar on our house, as you do on your house.
Right.
You have some solar, too. We actually were just talking about that. So it's not, you know, this study is fantastic. It's certainly interesting to think about. But once again, look, as a thinking as a physician and thinking critically, yes, going to all EVs in this country is a fantastic goal, and I think we're going to need to get there someday. How we get there and how fast we get there, and will it be fast enough?
Right.
Is for me as a physician, you know, if that's the big question. You know.
Well, and kind of to unpack a couple of things that you mentioned, EVs are more efficient. So EVs are 85 to 90% efficient compared to ICE vehicles, internal combustion engine vehicles, which are 17 to 21% efficient. So that's like getting to the wheels, and you know, it doesn't create all this heat. So right off the bat, they're inherently more efficient. So that's meaningful. And then you brought up the fact that we both have solar on our roofs. So I sound like a broken record, but I really like to say this over and over again because it's true. It's like EVs are the only vehicle that over time can become cleaner as either the grid gets cleaner or you add solar panels, you know, to your situation, to your roof or to your yard, whatever you do. And they can be powered by clean resources.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is great. The other thing is, yeah, coal. We're in a coal state. You're right. But when you're driving an EV, even if it's 100% powered by coal, so it's still, you know, more efficient than a gas or a diesel vehicle, less emissions. But you also have a centralized power plant. So you can make the argument that that centralized power plant can put on, you know, emissions capturing or, you know, cleaning devices that can kind of help things.
I would take that argument further, and that is, if you think about, I mean, the issue with the economy, with our carbon-based economy, it's we're carbon-based. We're taking hydrocarbons that have been underground for 200 million years, essentially a large battery, if you will, of hydrocarbon energy. Where did that come from? That came from solar, okay,
right.
Interestingly, right?
Right.
But what we're doing instead, though, is by tapping on these energy resources from 100, 200 million years ago, by tapping on that, we're actually borrowing from our future in some ways,
right.
You know, because, you know, the issue is not necessarily, you know, that we're using energy because we need to. The question is, what form that energy comes in. And as a physician thinking critically, I think about that often with regards to the EVs. So I did a thought experiment with my EV. So I have a Hyundai Ioniq 5. I originally had a Nissan Leaf 2015, same color as yours, although I think it was just a little, like, I don't know if yours faded or mine faded.
No, I think they changed it. Mine was ocean blue, and I think yours was sky blue.
Yeah, yeah.
So similar.
Yeah. and it was a great car for commuting back and forth to work, you know. But I wanted to have something, our son lives in St. Louis, Missouri, and so I was looking for a car to get us there and back and elsewhere.
Right.
And plus, it's the Ioniq 5 is a nice car.
Okay. It's a very nice car.
Our newest sponsor, Hyundai Ioniq 5. No. Give me a moment here. I'm going to grab my notes.
Yeah.
So I did some research, and I like to think of this critically as a physician, if you will. And so if you think of a gallon of gas, which is roughly 33 kilowatt hours of energy, okay? If you have my Ioniq 5 has 77 kilowatt hours of battery, okay? So essentially, if you take 77 kilowatt hours and divide it by 33, the amount of power in a gallon of gas, essentially it takes 2.3 gallons, equivalent gallons of gasoline to fill up my car.
Right.
Now that sort of blows my mind. I got this big car. I drive to St. Louis on 2.3 gallons of electricity per fill up, okay?
Right.
That has its big pluses and minuses. And like a doctor, I'm always looking at the ups and downs of anything I do. if I have a patient and I'm going to prescribe a medicine, not only am I thinking what's the benefit, but what's the risk. If I order a test, what's the benefit, what's the risk? I order an x-ray. Well, there's a benefit of finding something bad, but there's also the risk of radiation and whatnot. So what's the benefit of my EV and what's the risk? Well, the risk is, quite frankly, not a lot, okay? Because it's certainly not zero emission, because it's once again being powered by that coal plant, partially offset by our solar production. But nonetheless, if we're looking at EVs transforming our carbon-based economy nationwide, there's still some energy that goes into that, and it has to get in there somehow. And for me, it's just helpful to look at it as gas equivalents, okay? So once again, I have this EV, it takes 2.3 gallons to fill it up. There's emissions there. There's a potential negative consequence there. So where am I getting with this? If someone came to me and said, hey, you know, let's do a thought experiment here, Stuart. The U.S. economy is my patient, okay? We'll call it Uncle Sam, maybe crazy Uncle Sam, okay? Comes into my office and says, hey, I got this problem. You know, I'm really attached, if not addicted to carbon-based energy, you know? How can I change this as fast as possible? Help me, doc, help me. So as a doctor, I'll look at it critically. I want to know, okay, what's the history? Well, I, for 125 years, we've been pulling stuff out of the ground, both here and Saudi Arabia and everything else, and all these emissions are choking things up. And if basically I'm smoking too much, okay? Right. I need to decrease my emissions. And so just like any patient of mine who comes to me and says, hey, doctor, help me quit smoking, if this economy were, if this carbon-based economy was my patient, I can't just say, well, quit smoking. Quit emitting, because it just can't happen. If I just change everything to EVs overnight, that's going to be very hard to do. Right. And you know this. For instance, getting back to my trips to St. Louis with my EV, I'm not an early adopter. Okay, I'm a more late adopter, so I'm used to being able to go into that gas station and just filling up. Instead, now I have to consider another 20 minutes to an hour at Electrify America. At a Walmart, neither one of us sponsors, by the way, okay?
Right.
Although if they want to, I'm sure Stu will talk to them, okay? And that has to be, that's for me, as someone who's used to driving a gas combustion engine, that's a trade-off, okay? Right. So we can't just tell the U.S. economy to just stop, just all to EV, because it's not going to happen overnight, as you know. There's issues with, you know, sourcing the nickel and the cobalt and everything else for the batteries. There's the issue of the grid. How can the grid even handle that much electricity going over the wires that fast? We need smart grids. We need smart meters. And then once again, is it all going to be coal-fired anyway? So then we need to go more to solar. So there's a lot of big investments, a lot of big changes. And then I start thinking more critically also about EVs. Now, once again, I'm pro-EV, and this is certainly an EV podcast. Right. But once again, as a physician, I'm looking at the downside of this sudden change, okay? Or at least the burdens that I have to offer my, quote, patient in terms of how to go from carbon to renewables, okay? Right. So there's all these obstacles that have to be transversed. Now, let's look at the individual person comes to me now and they say, look, I want to help me here because I want to help the environment. You have an EV, Dr. Bird. How can I do this? And I would say, can you charge it at home? You know, where are you going to charge it? All these things. So once again, harder to get it all working. It's a great idea, which I am definitely for. But there are steps that you have to be jumped over to get there. Yeah. And as a physician, I try to think about that critically.
Well, we're also kind of in this time, because my wife's on a trip right now and actually going to Columbia, Missouri and St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And so there, you know, we don't want to give the impression that everything is solved, because it's not. There is the matter of waiting at, you know, if you're driving a you know, Ioniq 5 or a Bolt, it's typically a Walmart. You go into the Walmart. And it's not as fast as, you know, pumping gas. So that's just a fact. It's faster than it used to be, and there are cars that are more capable. But we're still sort of, you know, in the kind of beginning of this. And I would kind of make the argument that, you know, going from the horse and buggy to cars, you know, gas and diesel vehicles, that wasn't an easy transition either. But back then, I don't think we had this mindset that we're a very fast society today, you know, for better or for worse. And we need to have things fast because that's what we're used to. I mean, for me, when I purchased my Chevy Bolt EV, I had a decision to make, and I chose an EV with a slower charge rate. And the reasoning was that it was a comfortable, affordable vehicle that I felt comfortable in. The vast majority of my driving was going to be around town. And for the once or twice a year when we're taking trips, I just go in with the knowledge that it's going to take me a little bit longer to get to my destination.
Oh, yeah.
And to get back. You know, it is. And I have that luxury, you know, some people don't, but I have that luxury to be able to do that. And that trade-off totally made sense for me because I plug it into my garage and in the morning it's full. You know, I never have to go to a gas station, which is worth just so much to me.
Sure.
Just the disgustingness of the gas station. So people really need to go into it if they're considering electric vehicles with their eyes open and knowing things. And, you know, I you know, we also should talk about that the world isn't just cars. You know, I mean, there's a really passionate, you know, bicycle community, and that's wonderful if you can do that and do your, you know, commuting on a bike, you know. And there needs to be, you know, bike lanes for folks like that, which here in Louisville there's not so much, or not good enough in a lot of ways.
I can attest to that being a road cyclist myself.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and you put your life on the line a lot of times. You know, I drive down River Road and I'm just like, I feel so sorry for these people on bikes.
Yeah, I'm only on River Road Saturday mornings or not during rush hour, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's bikes. We talked about Ed Begley Jr. earlier. There's just the big awards ceremony. He went, and famously every year he goes and he takes the subway. And there was a video of him on the subway, and he says, I'm taking this really large EV. And it's the subway, you know? And so it's people like that that are really shining the light for everybody else to say, oh, you know, you have your way of doing things, but that's not the only way of doing things. And here's someone that, you know, can take whatever mode of transportation he wants, and he chooses to set an example and do the right thing, and chooses probably the greenest way to get there, which is absolutely wonderful, you know? And of course, there's trains and there are all these other kinds of modes of transportation that are super valuable that we really need to embrace as well. So it's kind of a holistic approach to everything. Mm-hmm.
Well, look, the EVs are a good way to get there to reducing emissions in the United States. If getting back to the analogy, if I have a patient who comes in who's smoking tobacco,
right,
and I want to help their health as best as possible, as fast as possible, it doesn't do me a lot of good just to say, quit smoking.
Right.
You know, I need to offer tools. And for my smokers, just as going into this analogy, you know, it's not really the nicotine that's the problem. It's the delivery system.
Right.
You know, because, you know, they're taking tobacco, combusting it, and inhaling it. It's like I tell my patients, you know, would you put it in a can and then light it on fire and put your face over the can,
right,
you know? So that's where the nicotine patches, nicotine gum, or medications that hit the nicotine receptors in the brain can be very helpful.
Right.
But even then, it can be very hard for my patients to quit smoking. And if I have someone who has tenuous lungs, who is looking at these high ozone days, who based, for instance, getting to this, back to the study, where a cleaner future, a cleaner, less carbon-based future would be good for their lungs. Well, also, just smoking a lot less would be good for their lungs, okay? So where am I getting with this? I think the EVs are the way to go. I think they're the most, as you said earlier, they're the most efficient. If you have a good smart power grid with renewables on the other end, that's also increases efficiency, I think, exponentially. But it's getting there.
And I mean, that's a really good point because, again, going back to my wife, I mean, I think I felt a lot more comfortable jumping in with both feet, you know, and I've, before I got my first EV, I wanted an EV for 4 years.
Right. So because they are awesome to drive.
They're awesome. And I have this kind of obsessive kind of personality. So, but with Laura, you know, it was really like, she wasn't necessarily won over immediately. So it made sense. Her first EV vehicle was a plug-in hybrid, so a Chevy Volt, which kind of a gateway drug. You know, it's kind of like you were saying, like easing into it. So
Plug-in hybrid. Yeah,
plug-in hybrid. I mean, so you know, for the vast majority of her traveling, it was a first generation Volt, so it was maybe 30-35 miles of electric until it switched over to gas. But for the vast majority of her traveling, she could do that. And then for the road trips, which she had to do, you know, do that on gas and be comfortable with that and then come back. Fast forward to today with COVID. I mean, I don't know if there's a lot of stuff we could thank COVID for, but one thing we can personally thank COVID for is the fact that we're down to one car, and that one car is an electric car. So we don't drive as much. We both work from home. So we have the ability to do that. Not everybody's able to do that. You have to go to the office. You have to see patients.
Oh, I hated during COVID, I hated working from home. Doing telehealth is just the worst. I need to be with my patients, touching them, examining them, interacting with them.
Yeah, but so for both of us, it's really cut down the amount of like time that we need to be working off-site. You know, I still do that, but it's not as frequently as if I had to go into the office. Same for her. I mean, she actually has the car this week. This is my first week without a vehicle that the entire week. It's the end of the week. I'm making it through. But, you know, she took that trip and helped her a little bit with finding DC fast chargers along the way. And she did it. She has a lead foot. So I said, keep that speed down. And she did, probably a little more than she actually had to. But she made it to her stops and she got to her destination. She was able to plug in at her friend's house in Columbia, Missouri, in her garage and fill at 4 or 5 miles an hour and, you know,
one kilowatt.
110 up to full, you know, because she was able to plug it in for a couple days there. You know, you can't do that. You can't. Most of my friends don't have gas stations in their garage. You know,
exactly.
You can't do that. So there is this kind of convenience factor with EVs that I think a lot of people don't necessarily talk about. They talk about the issues of, oh, it's going to take me longer at, you know, these DC fast charging stops, which is true. But I'd also make the argument that when, you know, gas and diesel vehicles start, you know, first came into the scene, those pumps that they first started with are not the pumps we see today.
Right. There's a little bell that went ding, ding, ding.
They were a lot slower. I'm sure they broke down a lot more frequently. Yeah. There were, you know, a host of problems. They weren't everywhere. I mean, that sounds like deja vu. You know, it's like, I think that it's not going to be a seamless rollout, you know, but we got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And I hate hearing that, you know, DC fast charger, I had to plug into 3 until I found one that works.
I've been there.
You know?
I've been there.
Yeah, I think we
I get
have
40 kilowatts,
well.
I get 200 kilowatts.
Yeah, So, and electricity is this kind of finicky thing. So there's money involved. So that's the good part. People like to have success when there's money involved because they want to be successful. So there's motivation there. But it's something that has to and will get better. I mean, with Tesla superchargers, they're already on their third or fourth generation of supercharger. So it's already happening, you know. But that's something that's going on right there. I also wanted to mention, because we're talking about transportation, the total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions make it the largest contributor to U.S. greenhouse gas emissions in general.
Oh, absolutely. Does not surprise me.
No, and it's 29%. So it's really important that we have this conversation, and whether we, you know, think about, unfortunately, there's not a passenger train here. Hopefully they're talking about having one. But really kind of exploring how each individual can do better.
Yeah. So my patient who wants to quit smoking, if and they have bad lungs, if I can get them from a pack a day to a quarter pack a day,
right,
that's a big plus. That's a big plus of their life, their lungs, etc. If we look at my previous, you know, hypothetical analogy of the patient who's the economy, Uncle Sam,
right,
who is my patient, if we can, any way we can reduce those emissions, whether it's coming out of, you know, the power plants or the tailpipe, it is a plus. Once again, I think the goal is EVs in the future, or, you know, whether it's lithium ion batteries or some other battery technology. But to get there and to, as to what we call in medication is harm reduction. So I've taken that patient who smokes a pack a day, that patient is now down to a quarter pack a day. Let's look at my EV. So essentially I have a 77 kilowatt hour battery. If I have a bit of a lead foot too,
yeah.
So if I'm driving this, if it's the summer and I'm driving to St. Louis and I've got the air conditioning going, I get maybe 3.2, 3.4 miles per kilowatt. I have a 77 kilowatt battery. So that gives me roughly a 260, 270 mile range. The car is rated for 300 miles, but a public safety announcement to future EV owners, that's what they say the range is. Isn't always the case.
No.
It depends on factor. Is it a cold battery? Is it a warm battery? And a few other things, including air conditioning, wind direction, and how fast you like
and
to
heat.
Drive.
Yeah.
And the heat on
cold
too.
Cold and heat. Yeah.
Actually, interestingly, quick sidebar, the Nissan Leaf I had, the 2015 had a very efficient heat pump.
Right.
Okay. My Ioniq 5 is strictly just like a, you know, baseboard electricity, like a turning on
my
a toaster.
Car too. Yeah.
It's like just turning on a toaster and it eats into the range. But anyways, okay, so I have a 260 mile range. And remember before I said a gallon of gas is roughly 33 kilowatt hours of energy. And I have roughly 2.3 gallons of electricity, if you will, in my car. That gives me an estimated miles per gallon of equivalent. So what's the miles per gallon of gasoline for my car if it was very efficiently run on gasoline? And that's roughly 114 miles per gallon. That's very efficient,
right.
Okay? But it's also a bit expensive. You know, the batteries are expensive. It's also very heavy. And not everybody can, there's a price, as we know, there's a price gap right now, although it's coming down between combustion ICE, if you will, internal combustion engines, and EV engines. So not everybody can do that. So if people were to ask me on how to fix this carbon-based economy sooner than later, I would say push EVs, make them as available as much as possible for, if you will, the masses.
Right.
Figure out ways to improve the charging thing, because on road trips, you know, I have between here and St. Louis, where our son is, we have one gas station that's in Mount Vernon, Indiana, a wonderful Walmart, great at my age, you know, 59, I get to go to the potty, you know, that sort of thing, you know, and, you know, you get there and one isn't working, but, you know, you wait a little bit and you get it working and you talk to other people. By the way, that's also very nice.
That's a nice thing, right?
You really get to talk to people at these things. But nonetheless, that's very efficient, 113 miles per gallon.
Right.
I think going forward, and not only just pushing EVs in this country, but also certainly I think hybrids, and other people may disagree with me, but I think hybrid engine technology, yes, there's still a tailpipe, yes, there are still direct emissions, but it's that smoker going from a pack a day to maybe half a pack a day in equivalent, or a quarter of a pack a day.
Yeah.
Because the Prius is the, what's the Hyundai, the big Hyundai hybrid, I can't remember the name, Elantra, They get about 50 miles per gallon, which is still double what other cars get. So so if let's say EVs did not exist, if every car in the United States went to hybrid technology, we likely would overall reduce our at least car emissions by half. And for me, that's a substantial reduction. That's a plus. Is it going to keep the place from warming up, you know, too much? No, but it's going to slow it down. And that gives us time for the other technologies to catch up.
Right? Yeah, and I think kind of to your point about, like, gradual. I mean, I'm already in our subdivision here. I'm already seeing I was the only one with solar panels, and then I was the only one with an electric car. But now there's another family with solar panels, and there are a few families with electric cars. Is it their only car? No. It's not their only car, but it's probably the car they use the most because it's the most fun.
Right.
You know, it's the least expensive one. You know, I'm just not a big fan of humongous SUVs and stuff, and you see a lot of those. But I think it's people are curious about it, and maybe that's their way of dipping their toe in the water. And they're like, oh, we'll add a electric car to the mix and see how that goes. And it helps that we have all these incentives now because people are looking at that and saying, oh, you know, I can get it for even less. And it's starting, the prices are starting to come down, you know.
You mentioned like the expense. Once again, for many, I think for many families in the United States, the EV could be an expense that maybe they can't quite shoulder.
Right.
But on the other hand, for instance, when I had that, when I had my Nissan, my Nissan Leaf, I figured that my commuting costs in electricity, it was actually $18 a month.
Right.
You know, and I have a 30-mile commute round trip.
Right.
You know, so there's that. There's those gains there too. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of easier to look at the sticker price of a car, whether it's new or used, and say, "Oh, this one's cheaper." If you actually do the math, and I know people that have, they will look at like a Toyota Corolla or, you know, Camry, and a, back when Tesla Model 3s were more expensive, you know, the Tesla Model 3, and this is also a doctor. So they did the math and they projected out 3, 4, 5 years. Well, that electric car, no matter what the electric car is, you know, virtually no matter what the electric car is, probably not talking about electric Hummer, but you will save money because you're saving a ton of money on fuel,
right,
and you're saving a ton of money on maintenance. So,
but on the other hand, like thinking once again critically as a physician,
yeah,
and with my patients, if I prescribe something, the pluses and the minuses, if I'm prescribing something in somebody in an electric vehicle and they're charging from home, they're going to save a lot of money.
Right.
LG&E right now is about 10 cents per kilowatt hour on your bill.
Right.
Now, if you go to, the downside is if you're on that road trip to St. Louis and you stop at Electrify America,
right,
which is one of the more cheaper ones, I think they're running between 40 and 50 cents per kilowatt hour, okay? There is that additional expense for that DC fast charging. And the other thing is, I think to make EVs work in this country, and you know this too, we all know this, we need EV gas stations on nearly every corner, or we need those Walmart parking lots to be like half full of like of EV chargers, you know.
We need more chargers, and I think this administration is looking at that, but especially, you know, especially for folks that are in apartments and condos, because and places where they don't have access to home charging. That's a real issue. And I mean, also talking about the health benefits and the, you know, the problems with tailpipe emissions, the folks that are suffering the most typically are folks in, you know, poorer communities because they're closer to the highways and all of that. I did want to mention some of these statistics that were in this study. It says, according to this report, the transition to zero emission transportation powered by clean, non-combustion energy from 2020 to 2050, so 30 years, would prevent up to 2.79 million pediatric asthma attacks, 147,000 pediatric acute bronchitis cases, 2.67 million pediatric upper respiratory systems, 1.87 million pediatric lower respiratory systems, and 508 infant mortality cases.
Right, that caught my attention.
Yeah, and I mean, and it's...
And by the way, this is real.
This is real,
like,
yeah.
My patients die from environmental... My patients with chronic lung disease,
right.
Some of them... the patients die from this,
right?
You know,
well, and then there's, so we're talking direct, you know, the kind of direct route, but then the indirect effects when you factor in climate change. I mean, climate change. So we have, you know, floods and fires and tornadoes and all sorts of these, you know, catastrophes that happen.
Not to mention March 14th. When we're taping this today,
yeah,
it's 81 degrees outside in
right.
Louisville, Kentucky, which is not really south. We're Midwest,
right?
You know? Yeah.
Right. So I mean, there are people hurting and dying from global warming. So that's an indirect effect of all of this. So it's valuable to kind of look at what's right in front of us. They're all right in front of us, but also valuable to see and think about. Not only are people getting hurt by these actions today, but you know they're also getting hurt by the indirect effects, if you will, of what's going on. And I mean, even just as kind of a silly, you know, kind of observational thing, I remember as a kid, because I always had severe allergies. I'm better now. I've had like 2 rounds of allergy shots, and I live with a bunch of cats, so maybe that helps. I don't know. So I'm a lot better than when I was a kid, but I remember going to Block Island and feeling like, man, I want to live here because I can breathe here.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, it's just the simple act of breathing that you can very easily take for granted, you know. And, you know, it Block Island, I remember when my wife and I went to Bermuda, it was the same kind of thing. It was like the air was so clean and... It's like you don't realize until you have that kind of direct comparison. We went recently to India, and I've never experienced that kind of pollution. It made what we are, you know, here experiencing seem like amazingly clean. You know, so it is all kind of relative. But yeah, I mean, it's just...
Those ozone alert action days, they put that up there for a reason.
Right.
You know? Of course, they also say take less trips and drive less, and that's not practical either because people have to get to work.
Yeah,
you know?
They need to bring money in, right?
And so, try to come up with something concise here for you. So, my prescription for cleaner air in the United States would be to invest in renewables. We don't want solar power energy that was stored 200 million years ago
right.
and then released into carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide right now. We need renewables now. We need wind, solar, and everything else. And nuclear, which is controversial. But I think nuclear power, certainly with the newer technologies, is certainly reasonable. Has its dangers also, of course. But it's for a different podcast, I suppose, or maybe entirely different podcast.
Right.
So Stu's nuclear energy podcast or something like that.
Not going to happen.
Yeah, not going to fit in.
Real soon.
Won't fit in the bolt. You
right.
know? So, and then also, look, once again, I can't tell my patients, oh, you want to quit smoking? Well, just quit smoking, man.
Right.
You know, or, you know. So reduction of emissions for this country, and if it's pushed too fast, there's gonna be a backlash, and I think we're probably seeing that to a degree within
now.
You know certain state legislatures in terms of other taxes, other things that are going towards EVs.
Right.
And I don't want to talk. I do not want to talk about politics. By the way, my politics are very central, but nonetheless. So a gradual transition, but a fast transition.
Right.
And part of that, I think, is going to be EVs, whether I think we like it or not, because I know a lot of the dealerships now are clamoring for EVs. The customers want EVs. There is still a strong section that want hybrids, rather. Right now, the dealerships are asking for hybrids, not electric vehicles, although there's still, I think, strong sales in electric vehicles, but they are, at least recently, they've been leveling off a little bit. I think the early adopters are have had their full.
Well, and it's also the interest rates are high.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So a gradual transition away from carbon-based energy with using, I think, hybrid vehicles as a strong transition point, and then keep pushing the infrastructure for EV vehicles so that they can get from point A to point B if you don't have a house. If, as you said, you have an apartment, you can't just plug in. You know?
So. Well, and there'll come a day, and I'm hoping it's sooner than later, that with the interest rates so high, we're kind of making a push towards smaller vehicles and more efficient vehicles. And moving away, hopefully, a little bit from the SUV, or at least the humongous SUV. I still like riding up a little bit higher, but my Bolt does, you know, and it's a very compact vehicle.
I would love to get a Ford F-150, you know.
Yeah.
Well, of course, a Lightning, too, you know.
Yeah. Well, but you're in Kentucky, so.
Yeah, but an F-150, it's sort of like a, and they're really nice inside. It's sort of like a couch without remorse, you know. You just drive around. I stole that from somebody, by the way.
So. Yeah, I kind of think the big SUVs, it's really like driving around in your living room. And what bothers me the most is just seeing, like, one small person in the driver's seat, and that's it, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just like, and I understand the need for safety. But, you know, it's sort of like if we all had, and we did at one point, smaller vehicles, then we'd be on a level playing field, you know?
Putting aside the environmental factors of EVs, electric vehicles, putting aside the politics and everything else, I mean, they are fun to drive.
Right.
I'm sorry. Like it's all torque, baby.
Yeah.
Even my golf cart, my Nissan Leaf, you know, had maybe 60 miles on the battery, but 0 to 30, man, that thing screamed.
Right.
Okay. And people would be surprised when I would, you know, take off against these Camaros or something, these Mustangs. You know?
Right.
And now with the IONIQ 5 I have, yeah, it's fun to drive and it's quiet. Speaking of health benefits of EVs, reduction in anxiety during traffic jams when you're zipping along and not, the next thing it slows down, but it's still really quiet whether you're going fast or slow. A lot of fun to drive.
Yeah. This has been great. I mean, do you have any other things you wanted to bring up or?
I think this podcast is great.
Oh, thank you.
And I like listening to it. I'm sure your listeners do. Also, what else? We didn't talk about home energy.
Okay.
So, like, you know, like right now, I think in maybe California, they're looking at phasing out like natural gas appliances or something along those lines. You know, we have a speaking of electrical technology. When we take our EV to St. Louis. We stay at this Airbnb, but a lot of the Airbnbs now don't have like a kitchen, you know.
Mm.
So we bring a little induction, you know, like
I love
1200
that.
Watt, you know, cooktop with us, and very efficient. You just put your pan of water on there, or whatever it is, and it heats up very fast without any residual heat coming out. And so that's pretty cool. There's a guy in our neighborhood. His name is Daryl.
Daryl Cleary.
That's it, yeah. And he, so.
I know Daryl.
So there's this, my wife and I were walking by this house being built, and it was it took a while to build. And it's basically concrete walls surrounded by like this foam, okay?
Yeah, he's had us over, so. Yeah.
It's like zero emission, he said, I'm off the grid, and I look and I don't see any wires going to his house.
He's totally off the grid, and I find that fascinating. I think he's the only one in Louisville, and it's legal. There's no wires. He is totally off the grid. And that's for his house and his two cars. And God bless him. That's great. And I think that's something that is interesting, is like technology, there's a lot of talk now with AI and fear about technology, but technology can be your friend too. And I think it is when it comes to electric vehicles. I think that, you know, we're not done yet, you know, innovating, but it's really amazingly efficient. Like you said, it's great fun to drive. It's in a lot of ways a better vehicle. And I think the biggest thing that's going to drive everything forward is driving the price down. So, and that's, I think, right around the corner because, I mean, Rivian just had an announcement about a smaller vehicle. Tesla's supposed to be coming out. I'm sure they'll have an announcement probably sometime this year about their smaller vehicle, where there's competition. And that's a good place to have competition is smaller and more efficient and more affordable. Because I think, you know, we want it. I think our listeners here want it. They want to see EVs for all. And yeah, you can buy a used EV for very reasonable if you just need to get around town. So that's an option. But yeah, they should be accessible to everybody. That's charging and the cost of the electric vehicle itself.
Yeah, and for EV owners, come to Louisville because there are a number of charging stations around. Yeah. A lot of which, Stuart, yourself, you should pat yourself on the back for having making with your previous efforts to get those things installed.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's been great. So, well, unless there's anything else, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure, Stuart.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
This has been a lot of fun. So,
thank you for listening to this episode of Stu's EV Universe. I would like to thank Eden Unger for creating the artwork and the music for this episode. Remember, please rate, review, subscribe, and share, as that's the only way we can continue to grow. Now you can support us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/stusEVU. Remember, the EV revolution runs on your energy. I'm Stuart Unger. See you next time.